Welcome to yet another episode of Practical Azure. I'm Jim O'Neill, a technology evangelist in the Boston area, and your host for this series. Today we're going to cover a topic that I've been spending a lot of time on recently, Windows Azure Mobile Services. Compelling application experiences are no longer solely defined by the user experience on the device. We expect our applications to provide information that's relevant to us in terms of where we are, when we're there, who we know, and what we like to do. There's a host of services out there that provide location-based and time-sensitive data, and others that enable integration with social media platforms for authentication as well as, of course, networking. You want your applications to tap into these rich capabilities, but as a mobile application developer, you don't want to be, nor have the time to become, an expert in all of the plumbing technologies to bring those features to your app. That's the role of back-end as a service providers like Windows Azure Mobile Services. Mobile Services provides REST-based interfaces and SDKs for Windows, iOS, Android, and HTML5 JavaScript for easily accessing scalable storage, providing authentication services, and leveraging the push notification mechanisms for those platforms. This is one of my favorite features of Windows Azure to demo, so let's get started. So in about the next 10 minutes or so, I'd like to set up a mobile service and get a Windows Phone 8 application running using that service just to show you how quick and easy it is to do this. So as with most of the services in Windows Azure, we're going to start with the new option at the bottom here, and we're going to pick a new mobile service. We'll create that service. As with all of the services that we've discussed in Windows Azure, you're going to have to provide a unique URL. So I will call it Jim Service. And hopefully that is not used, so we're good. Windows Azure Mobile Services includes essentially data management on your behalf. So that data management is actually leveraging a SQL Azure or SQL database in the back end. So it's going to ask me to create that database. I'm going to create a new instance. I could use an existing one if I wanted to. And as with all services, we need to select which region to host this service. I'm going to pick the East US. Since I selected to create a new database, I need to select a server on which to host that database, and I'll go ahead and create a new database server as well and provide a login for that server. Hit the button. In about 30 seconds to a minute or so, I'll have a new Windows Azure Mobile Service set up, and then we'll start leveraging some of the specific features of that service. Now that my service is fully provisioned, let's take a dive into the portal and see what options are available for working with this service. The quick start page here gives me the capability to create an application that is fully functional and will run across multiple different platforms. So I can pick a Windows Store application, a Windows Phone application, an iOS application, an Android application, or an HTML5 JavaScript application. Each of these applications is essentially a small to-do list app that will run on those respective platforms and leverage the exact same back-end as a service capabilities that I just created inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services. So I'm going to elect to build a Windows Phone 8 application here, but the experience will be similar across these different platforms. What I'll need to create this application is the appropriate SDK for that platform, so the Windows Phone 8 SDK and the Mobile Services SDK, which I've already provisioned for myself. On iOS and Android, you would have similar types of downloads that you would need to provision. I'm going to create a table on the back-end service. This is just to sort of seed the Windows Azure Mobile Service database to work with this particular to-do list table. And then we're going to download an application. So this application that I'm going to download here is a C# application. So I'm just going to save the app in my downloads directory. And we'll visit the directory and extract the application. And simply open the app. So again, in this case, I have a Windows Phone 8 application. I could have elected to do a Windows 8 application, or had I had the iOS and Android environment set up, I could have done those as well. This application will essentially run out of the box, so I'm going to go ahead and run it inside of the emulator. And the emulator here for Windows Phone 8 is on the screen at this point. The build is starting, and what the application again is going to do is create a small to-do list item tracker, so I could essentially create my laundry list or my grocery list or something along those lines and keep track of it. So I can enter some text at the in the field here. Let's say get coffee, which I haven't had any yet today. So we'll say get coffee and say save, And what you'll see is the item at the bottom there, so it's keeping track of my to-do list. And then if I'm done with getting coffee, I could check that item off and it would disappear from the list. Okay. Now what you're not seeing here is that this is all leveraging Windows Azure Mobile Services on the back end. So let's take a look at the portal and kind of see what happened in behind the scenes. One of the tabs on my Windows Azure Mobile Services is a data tab. So on the data tab, you'll notice that there's a to-do item table. That table was created explicitly when I went through the quick start page and said create this table. I could have created it programmatically as well, but for the purposes of this particular demo, you do that explicitly through the quick start. Inside of that table, you'll notice that there is an item called Get Coffee, and the complete flag is set to false. That got there because I essentially used this application and inserted a record in this particular table. This table is backed, again, by a SQL database running inside of Windows Azure. Now let's take a look at the code that actually had that happen and made that happen inside of my phone application. So I'm going to stop running the app. And let's take a look at a little bit of the code. The first thing I want to show you is the app XAML file. So the app XAML file is essentially the entry point to an application for Windows Phone 8. And what you'll notice here is in the application class itself, we set up a reference to this thing called a mobile service. So the mobile service is the entry point to all of the data services, the push notifications, and so on that are available with inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services. And it's through the Windows Phone 8 SDK that you're able to get these for Windows Azure Mobile Services. iOS would have a similar type structure and Android as well for the classes to support those platforms. You'll see the endpoint that we created in the portal, and here is my key, essentially my password for that particular mobile service. Now within the application itself, so the main page of this particular application where I actually inserted an item into the list, you'll notice that I use that mobile service reference to get a reference to a table called to-do item. And within the code, there are a few different options here, but the insert option is right here. And essentially all I had to do was get the reference to the to-do item table and say insert this item. That item, the to-do item, is defined by a class structure that you see up here, essentially consisting of an ID field, which is going to be part of every table inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services, and then whatever other fields that you're interested in a text field, and in this case the complete Boolean field to indicate whether or not that item has been completed. Underneath the covers, there's a lot going on. There is essentially an HTTP request response cycle going on to take this information from the Windows Phone 8 client and send it up to Windows Mobile Services, record the information inside a SQL database, send back a response, and so on. But all that gets abstracted from you through the Mobile Services SDK and the REST services that are part of that. So it makes programming to a service incredibly, incredibly easy. So you can see here we've got the insert. We also have a refresh, which is essentially a read, like a select statement. And then we also have the update to update the item whenever we've completed it. Check the box and basically said complete is equal to true. That is one of the features inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services, the ability to quickly store data that's relevant to your particular application. There's a few other features as well, and one of those is this feature called authentication. So if we look at the scenario that I just ran through with this particular application, I was able to easily enter an item and have it stored as part of my to-do list. But what if there's multiple people using this particular application? All of our stuff is going to show up in the same table, and there's no attribution of my Get Coffee versus your Get Coffee or whatever tasks that you provided as part of this list. Additionally, you may not just want everybody to use it. You may want to have some sort of authentication so that you know who is actually using your application. So what you can do is you can actually take advantage of another feature inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services called Identity. So the idea behind Identity is to tap into identity providers that many of us are already using in other applications, like Twitter, like Facebook, like Google, like Windows Live, or what we call Microsoft Account. The idea here is as you offload the authentication of a particular user to these services that are well-versed in doing so, and get back just essentially a small token that says, yes, I vouch for this person as being a valid Twitter user or a valid Facebook user. And as part of your application, you don't worry about how to do any of that. You just tap into that service. So I want to do that as part of my Windows Phone 8 application, and I'm going to do so using Twitter as the authentication provider. Now, to do that, you do have to do a little work on the other end of the line, with Twitter in this particular case, to provide this trust relationship between Twitter and your application. So to do so, it's going to vary depending on the provider. Within Twitter, you need to actually create an application through the Twitter developer portal. I've already done that, and it's fairly simple to do so just kind of by following their directions. But the important piece of information that you need to retain from that subscription process is, in Twitter's case, two pieces of information, the consumer key and the consumer secret. So I'm going to take that key and just simply paste it into the Windows Azure Mobile Services portal, and then we're going to go back and grab the consumer secret as well. And what this is essentially doing, it's allowing Windows Azure Mobile Services to essentially act as a client to the Twitter authentication services. So by doing so, we've set this up for Twitter authentication. And then the next step we need to do is go back into our application and set up a way to prompt the user for their Twitter ID. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to do that as part of the loading of this page. So I'm going to add a little bit of code in here to change how the page gets instantiated. We're going to add a callback here for loaded. And inside of the loaded page, we're first going to create a mobile service user. And we'll just call him user. And this is going to represent the authenticated user on the Twitter end. And we're going to essentially not do anything until we have a valid user. So we'll say while user is equal to null. Let's tap into that mobile service. And we're going to do so by saying app.mobileservice.loginasync. And as you can see from the options for logging in via the async capabilities, there's Facebook, Google, Microsoft account, and Twitter, which not coincidentally map to those authentication providers that we set up in the portal. This is going to be a async call, so we need to set up our async and await keywords there as well. So by doing so, hopefully we now have authentication through the service, and we want to refresh the to-do items when we start the application. So we're going to move that from the loaded event or to the loaded event from the on navigated to event, which is where we originally had that code. So what this is going to do is, let me just run it here. Bring up the emulator. And this is going to tap into Twitter's authentication protocol. So what we should see pop up here is a Twitter page that asks me for my user ID and my password. And again, this is my Twitter user ID and password. And when I authorize the application, assuming I provide the correct user ID and password, it's going to redirect to my application, and now I'm in the exact same application, but I've been authenticated through the Twitter service, and there's essentially a user ID token out there that can track who's using the application at that time. Now, what I want to actually do is take that token and do a little bit more interesting work with that in terms of the application itself. It now knows that I'm the one that's logged in, but it's not able to attribute anything I do in the application with that particular user ID. So we're going to stop the application again, and then we're going to do a little bit work on the back end in terms of the service. So within the service, and specifically within the data tables that are available, I'm able to grant access or deny access to the various different tables based on the authentication process. So in this simple example, we started out that anybody could talk to these tables by having the service application key, the thing that we set up in the app XAML file. I want to lock it down a little bit. I want to basically say only authenticated users can use this particular service and these particular tables. So I can set up the authentication this way just by changing the options there. And then the other thing I want to do is when I insert a new to-do list item, I want that to-do list item to sort of be tracked to me as a user. So I have the user ID from Twitter, and I can inject that user ID into the item that I want to insert into the to-do list table. And I can simply do that in a back-end script here. This is JavaScript or Node.js, where I'm on the fly going to create a new column in the table that grabs the user ID from the authentication process we just saw. That's getting passed in through user.userID. And then the item is the to-do list text and the complete flag that is also coming in from the client. I'm just going to add another user field to that, and that will magically show up in the to-do item table. And then the other piece that I need to do to complete this story is that when I pull the data out of the table, I only want to see the items that are attributed to me, to my Twitter user ID in this case. So I'm going to update the query here that gets executed whenever you do essentially a read against this table. So we're going to add a where clause here, and that where clause is going to take a look at that new field we added and make sure that it matches the user ID that comes in. And we'll save that script as well. So there's a lot of scripting that you can do on the server side to really change the dynamics of your application. Now when I go back to the app and run it again, let's see what happens. So I'm going to get prompted again by Twitter to log in. I could cache this information if I wanted to, but I haven't done that yet in this app. So I'm going to have to provide my user ID and password once again. And we'll authorize the application. All right, and one thing you'll notice is that it no longer says get coffee, and that's because get coffee wasn't really attributed to me as a user because I hadn't had that function implemented at that point, so it's not going to show up as part of the where clause. So I can add another to-do item here. Let's say get more coffee, and we'll save that item. And there you see that to-do item shows up there. So let's go back into the service and back into the table and take a look. Let's see what's different in the table. So we'll go into the to-do item table, and we have yet another row here, and you'll notice that a new field automatically got added to the table. That's happening because we have this concept of what's called a dynamic schema. This is a SQL database table behind the scenes, but because there's a setting on the service that's currently set to dynamically create new columns as needed, this user ID column gets pushed into the application. Now let's say I want to enhance this application a little bit further. What I'd like to be able to do is be notified that I have some items on my to-do list that I need to take care of. Now typically I might put a time field on each particular to-do item that needs to be done by a certain amount of within a certain time or by noon or something along those lines. I don't have that implemented, so we're gonna kind of fudge it a little bit. But what I want to be able to do in this case is create a service that potentially every half hour would push a notification to my phone that basically says, hey, you need to do this thing because it's not done yet. So what I want to do next is take advantage of Windows Azure push notification mechanisms and tapping into specifically the push notifications for Windows Phone. I can also tap into push notifications for Windows 8 and for iOS and Android as well. Windows Phone turns out to be slightly easier, so we're going to simply be able to do that by adding a little bit more code into our application. So I'm going to stop the application here again, and then we're going to add just a tad bit of code in here. And the first bit of code I'm going to add is to the application. So with all of these notification mechanisms, typically what happens is you get a unique identifier for the device. And in Windows 8 and Windows Phone, we call this a notification channel. So every time the application starts, it goes and essentially renews this notification channel, this unique endpoint for that device, so that if something interesting needs to be pushed to the device, the service that's pushing that information knows how to reach it. So in Windows Phone 8, we call that an HTTP notification channel. So I'm going to create a new field that captures that. So HTTP notification channel, and we'll just call it channel. And we'll just quickly resolve that reference. Okay, there we go. And to get that channel, we're going to have to essentially renew it every time we want to run the application. These channels can actually expire as folks, you know, kind of drop off the grid and devices go away and that type of thing. So I'm going to put this into the launching event, and what we're going to do here is just write a little bit of code to instantiate or that channel. So we'll call it channel.http notification. We're going to see if we've already got one, and we can give it a unique name for our particular application. If we do have one, then we're all set. But if we don't, we need to get one. So we'll say channel. If it's null. And we're going to create a new one of these things. So, oops, actually it's a constructor, not a create. So I'll fix that in a second. We'll do a new there. Then we're going to open this channel. And then we're going to bind it. So in Windows Phone 8, we essentially have to bind it to either a shell or a tile toast. So in this particular case, we're going to bind it to a toast notification versus a tile. And this is actually supposed to be notification channel. So that, hopefully everything should resolve. So what this has done is talked to the notification service that's out there that Microsoft is essentially hosting for you and getting a unique ID for your particular application. So once you have that unique ID for your application, you need to take that unique ID and tag whatever items that you're going to store inside of the mobile service with that ID. And in our particular case, what we're going to tag with that ID is a to-do list item. So I'm going to add a new field to this class here, and we're going to call it channel. And it's just going to be a string because it turns out that that notification channel is simply a URL. So that's going to allow me to pop a new field into the table. And then lastly, what I'm going to do is every time I do a insert, what we want to be able to do is add a new field into the item. So let's see here, where are we doing the... somewhere in here there should be an insert. There we go. So there's the save. So what we're going to add here is populating this particular field, and we're going to populate it from the channel. Let's see, the channel's not showing up here. It's public, make that a static. There we go. And go back to our code, and hopefully we should see it. Now there's the channel, and we want to get the channel URI, and then we want to turn it into a string. What that's going to do is every to-do list item now should have the identifier for the device on which that to-do item was inserted. So we'll do a save here, and presuming I did everything correct, let's run the app one more time. Let's see, I have an unauthorized exception. Ah, that's actually a good teaching point here. I forgot to do something rather important. One thing that you have to do inside of Windows Phone and actually Windows 8 as well is you have to indicate your intention for your application to actually do notifications. It's not something that just happens out of the box. You have to essentially tell the user that you intend to do these things. So what I need to do in the capabilities for this application and the manifest for this application is basically say, yes, this application is indeed going to send push notifications. So alert the user to that whenever he downloads this application and installs it. So let me run it again, and hopefully that has been cleared up. And the application starts one more time, and we will quickly here log in. And put my password here. Okay, and instead of coffee, let's start thinking about lunch. So we're going to say order lunch, and we'll do a save. All right, same dance here. We added another to-do list item into our list. Now let's take a look at the data behind the scenes and see what we've changed. So now you'll notice that we have order lunch in our table. We also have the user ID, but we have another field that got added dynamically called channel, and that is essentially a long URL. This URL is the unique identifier of the device, the Windows Phone device, the emulator in this case, that will allow another process to essentially send information to it, a push notification to it. So what I want to do next is, let me just shut the application down, and let's send the push notification. So what I might do inside of Windows Azure Mobile Services is I might set up a scheduler. So a scheduler is the ability to set up a job that will run on a periodic basis that will do something interesting. And the interesting thing that we'll want to do now is kind of go through this table of to-do items and send out reminders to the devices that are associated with the users that that listed those to-do items. So I'm going to create a new job. We're going to run this on demand, but I could run it again periodically every 15 minutes or what have you. And the script here is also going to be written in Node.js. And to save a little bit of time, I actually have the script captured here on another screen. So I'm just going to do a copy and paste here. And we're just going to plug the script in. And let's do a paste. And just do a quick walkthrough of what's going on here. So the script is called Remind, and we're going to run it on demand. It's going to grab a reference to the table, the to-do item table that has all the items in it. It's going to filter that table and look for only the items that aren't complete, and then it's going to read all of those items. Now, the way Node.js works, it's all an asynchronous type environment, so whenever it does a read, that's an asynchronous operation. So when you register a read operation, what you have to do is register a callback that will be executed, a function that will be executed when the read is done. That's this process data function. The process data function will go through all of the records that it returned from the query. It will check to see if the channel is null, because we have some records in there that we added before we added the channel capability. So there'll be some nulls in there. We don't want that to cause the application to break. And then we're going to call a sendToast method on the push notification object. So there are there's a push notification object that knows about Windows Phone push notifications, Windows 8 push notifications, Apple, and Google as well. In this particular case, the MPNS object is the Windows Phone specific version. It will send that toast out to the specific channel, the specific identifier for that device, and it's going to just send something called reminder as the first item of text, and then the actual text of the to-do item as the second item. So let me move this over, and let's bring up the emulator here, so hopefully we can see this in action. I'm going to execute this script just by hitting run once, and this should send the push notification out, and hopefully we will see a text. Oh, you can see that up at the top of the emulator there, reminder, order lunch. I can click that text item, and that will bring me back into the application on Windows Phone. So now you've pretty much got the full tour. We talked about data, we talked about authentication, we talked about push notifications, and you actually got to see a little bit of the scripting as well. What I do want to talk about just briefly is that when you do deal with other platforms, specifically with push notifications, there's a little bit more work you have to do. It's akin to the work we had to do to set up the identity management. We have to get credentials from those other push notification management platforms and set those up inside of our service. And Windows Phone makes it a little bit easier to do so, because there's a certain number of push notifications you can send out without any authentication required. There's a couple other tabs in the service here that I'll just briefly walk through. There's a configuration tab, and the configuration tab leads you to the SQL database that's behind the scenes in case you want to manage that directly. The dynamic schema option that I mentioned before, it's this option being set to on that allowed us to create these columns on the fly. Once your application is kind of in a steady state, you may want to turn that option off so that you don't get random columns just created. And then there's also another feature down here called cross-origin resource sharing, which is really pertinent only in the HTML5 JavaScript realm for the ability to do cross-domain type calls from a website. We also have a scale option here, so this is the way you would dial up and down the resources that you might need to support your site. You can use the default shared mode, which is essentially a single shared machine that you're using inside of the Windows Azure Cloud, which is also free, and you can dial that up to multiple reserved instances as demand dictates, and you can also sort of back it down as well in case you have a decrease in demand if you have some sort of a cyclical type business or something along those lines that you want to map to. And you can also increase the database size as well if you're starting to store quite a bit of data. And then lastly, there's the logs table, and the logs table is where any errors that you've generated from these scripts would appear. Luckily, there are no errors at this point. It's pretty atypical for my demos, but you would see errors in here and be able to address those errors in your specific scripts, whether they be the scheduled scripts or the data scripts behind the inserts, deletes, updates, and retrieves from your various different data tables. And that pretty much covers it. You've pretty much got the 360 view of Windows Azure Mobile Services. So let's head back to a closing slide and wrap this up. As of this recording, Windows Azure Mobile Services is still in preview mode, but you can access it as well as any of the other Azure services with the Windows Azure trial account provisioned via the link I've provided here. During the demo, I actually covered quite a bit of the tutorial materials you see here. That's a testament to how quick and easy it is to get started and create a working service. Do give it a shot yourself, though, and spend some time exploring some of the more advanced scenarios that you can accomplish through server-side scripting. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Practical Azure. Next up is the top-level client layer, and I hope you'll join me for that session, which will be the finale to this Practical Azure series.